I'm Matt Baum, and this is the Ministry of Hemp podcast, brought to you by ministryofhemp.com, America's leading advocate for hemp and hemp education. Before we get started today, I just want to say thank you to our partners at Receptra. Receptra is one of the brands that we partner with on ministryofhemp.com. And later on in the show, I'm going to tell you all about their Serious Rest gel capsules and Serious Rest chamomile tinctures. I've been using them myself, and I really like them. And you can find their whole line of high-quality CBD products over at ReceptraNaturals.com. Thanks again to Receptra for partnering with us and helping us to bring you this show. Speaking of this show, today, my conversation is with Mark Renders of Hemp Flax. And Hemp Flax might not be a name you are familiar with, but they're one of Europe's largest hemp purveyors. They do everything. You'll hear us talk about it, but they are involved in so many different aspects of the hemp world that allows them to use the entire plant, including the dust that comes off of the plant while they are creating hemp fiber. It's incredible. Now you may be asking yourself, Matt, why are we talking about hemp in Europe when we're supposed to be focused on hemp in the United States? Well, we are still focused on hemp in the United States. And trust me, this conversation is gonna all come back around to that. But I thought it would be really cool to talk to someone working in the industry in a country that is a lot more hemp friendly. Now, that's not to say we're not hemp friendly here. It's supposed to be legal. But as you know, the FDA and the United States government have not exactly been leading the charge on how all of this hemp is going to be regulated in the states. We're sort of letting the states shake it out on our end. And a similar thing is happening in the European Union and the UK as well. You'll hear more about that shortly. So let's get right into it. This is my conversation with Mark Renders. He's the CEO of Hemp Flax, Europe's largest independent grower and processor of industrial hemp. Hemp Flax has operations across Europe with over 2,200 hectares of hemp expected to be harvested in 2020. Mark has been with the company since 2008 and was appointed CEO in 2016. From 2016 to 2019, he also served as president of the European Industrial Hemp Association, which is Europe's foremost coalition of the industrial hemp processing industry. He remains on that board of directors today. Needless to say, Mark knows what he's talking about. Here is my conversation with Mark Renders. Now, Hemp Flax is not a name that we really know in the United States, but you guys are gigantic. Can you tell us a little bit about what Hemp Flax does?
Yes, I can. We are in the business for 25 years already in growing, harvesting, and processing industrial hemp. And we are one of the pioneers of the post-war industrial hemp industry in Europe. We are founded in 1994 with the entrepreneur Ben Bronkus. And Ben founded Hemp Flax in his vision to bring industrial hemp back to as being a legal industrial crop. He saw the possibilities of hemp from the Hemp Museum in Amsterdam. He's also the founder and owner of the Hemp Museum in Amsterdam and Barcelona. And there he learned about the past uses of hemp in the golden age. You know, the big sailing ships had ropes and sails made from hemp fiber.
Right.
Sailors were dressed in hemp fiber-based clothing. The brewings in the ship was made with hemp. So, and as you know, after Prohibition, industrial hemp completely disappeared. And
let's talk about that for just a second. I'm curious, was there the same hemp prohibition in Europe that we saw in the United States? Because like right after World War II, hemp pretty much vanished and was treated very much like marijuana as a crop and has slowly been coming back. Same thing in Europe?
Yeah, it was a worldwide global thing, yeah, because it was the prohibition on UN basis. And there were some countries, for example, like France, they had some kind of exemption in that time already. But the big revival of industrial hemp happened in the late 80s, early 90s, when more and more countries changed the legislations in such a way that made possible for farmers to grow industrial hemp. So to be very clear on that, they did not remove cannabis from the scheduled list, but they made exemption rules industrial hemp. So in the Netherlands, for example, the prohibition is not valid for hemp that's meant for fiber and seed production, as long as it's grown in the open soil outdoors. And that's how the Netherlands dealt with it. But the problem we have today in the world is each country is making their own exemptions on the prohibition, because the prohibition on the scheduling of cannabis is still in place. That's why we are looking very forward to the United Nations Single Convention meeting that should have taken place last year, being postponed in March, and now it's being postponed in December, that cannabis is getting descheduled as soon as possible as an industrial crop. So we are not falling under the convention rules anymore.
Can I ask, is it similar to the States where, like, they say that hemp is basically anything with a certain amount of THC or below, and then anything above that is still scheduled? Is it this? Is it similar?
Yeah. Now, in the exemption rules, and because we are still, let's say, under the prohibition of the single convention, but the exemption rules are based on 0.2% THC. You have in the States 0.3.
Yeah.
We have European countries mostly 0.2. And you have some countries like Swiss, for example, made 1% rules, but 0.2 is the general rule in Europe.
So here we're dealing with a very similar issue that you are, but it's state by state. The United States hasn't ruled as like a federal agency on hemp yet. So we have states making different rules for hemp, which is ridiculous, and hopefully it sounds like you guys are about to get out of that. I think we're stuck in it for a little bit here, so but because you were able
in Europe, you have the same thing. Not every country has the same rules,
right? Of course.
So, you have also there are on state level differences. Like in the Netherlands, for example, we are not able to harvest the flowers and the leaves for CBD production.
Really?
The Dutch exemption is only valid for fiber and seed production. So I'm not touching the leaves and the flowers and the Dutch crops. But if I go 10 kilometers in that direction, meaning east,
right,
I'm in Germany. And we have crops in Germany as well because we're that close to the border. And in Germany, it said it's industrial hemp. It doesn't matter if you use it for the roots or the fiber or the seeds or the leaves and the flower, as long as you stay below 0.2%,
right,
it's industrial hemp and growing at the farm. We don't care what you do with it. And I think that's how it should be, because it's really strange that governments are deciding what to do with a crop and what not.
Right. Especially a crop that's not a drug at this point. that is essentially harmless from everything we're finding. Can I ask, is that why you have locations in Germany and Romania and the Netherlands? It's because different places are, the rules are different, basically, and you can do different things there? Is that the case?
No, we didn't choose different locations because of the rules, because Germany and the Netherlands was already there because of the geographic location of the factory. Because what I said, we are really on the border of the Dutch-German border. And our growing area is 50 kilometers around the factory, because the transport of raw materials, the straw, is very voluminous product, so it takes a lot of trucks to do that, so it high transport cost. But that's why we try to keep our growing area as close as possible to the factory. So that's why we have a part in Germany as well. And of course, now as a coincidence, and change and the difference in rules and regulations, we have an advantage that we can grow for CBD in Germany as well. The Romanian factory, actually, we started farming in Romania in 2012 because we were looking for expansion. And we had to decide, or we expand the Dutch factory, but meaning putting a bigger production line in, but then we also needed more growing area to grow our crops. But we suffered from a lot of competition for agricultural land around us, mostly by the bioenergy industry, the biomass for biogas. So we said, okay, we're picking another location, more southly in a different climate zone, to one hand spread our climatal risk, because we are operating here in more sea climate type in right. the Netherlands, where in Romania we have a continental climate type, and we are more southerly, so we can halve the seats as well. And in the northern European operations, we do not halve the seeds because the hemp starts flowering 4 weeks later compared to Romania. And then I end up in September with my harvest of the seeds in the Netherlands. And then I need 3 weeks of drying and retting in the field. And then I'm ending up in October. And I need to get my stalks dry from the field. But to get something dry from the field in the Netherlands in October is very difficult because of the climate.
Yeah.
It's very risky. Where Romania, actually this weekend, we started harvesting the hemp and the seeds are ripe.
Oh, wow.
And because of the continental climate, we have relatively dry, good weather up to November. So we have a lower harvest risk if we do seeds.
So it's like just a much longer growing season where you can do different things overlapping each other, basically.
Because we have a more southerly latitude, we can sow earlier. So in Romania, we're sowing in the mid of March, end of March, where in the Netherlands, we do end of April, mid of April.
So it sounds like Hempflax was founded in the 90s. So you guys had a much longer jump on the hemp business than we've had in the States. You're one of the first fully like vertically integrated hemp companies in Europe. Is that correct?
It's correct. The reason we are vertically integrated is on the one hand, we want to make a supply chain as short as possible. The more companies or chains you have in a supply chain, the more expensive the product gets.
Of course.
Because each chain has its profit and margin being calculated over the profit and the margin of the previous chain. So you get the so-called bullwhip effect, it's called in economics. The product gets too expensive.
Right.
On the other hand, because we were the pioneers, we were one of the first, there was nothing there. So if you want to bring something to the market, you had to do it for yourself,
sure.
from the seed till the end product. And the starts in the farming with a special harvester. And believe me, in the first years, we tried every type of harvester that was there out there commercially available. And all of them we've destroyed completely because hemp is a very difficult crop to harvest. And then if you cannot buy something in the market, you start building yourself something.
Sure, you may as well design
it. Then you end up with a machine that's pretty expensive. So the farmers are not likely to invest in it, especially when it's a new crop and a new company. They're curious in buying and investing in harvesting equipment. So we have to do it. And in the factory as well, and the end products as well. And the other reason is that we do the harvest ourselves is a very quality-based reason. Because we have a very strong feeling that quality starts in the field and not at the factory.
Absolutely.
So by controlling the harvest, we're controlling the quality. And this has to do with drying and redding. So, you know, we are more likely to wait till after the rain to get a crop in because we know we get a bit more redding and better quality fiber. Where a farmer says, you know, it's going to rain next week. I take the crop in now because then I have it in before the rain.
Right.
And that's a normal thinking for the farmer. But then you don't have the best quality of fiber because you need the fiber to be redded a little bit.
So let's talk about what all Hempflax does. You're involved in nutrition. You're involved in animal husbandry. You're involved in, plastics, fibers. What don't you guys do with hemp? It seems like you started from the root, literally, and you go all the way up to the flower. What was the first thing Hempflax like invested in when this started?
Oh, the very first thing is we started separating the fiber and the core from each other. So that was the first step, so-called decortication. And we started in an old flex mill in the early 90s, but then we found out pretty quickly that the flex equipment was not suitable for processing hemp.
Right.
And we found out pretty fast that hemp needs specialized equipment. So also there we started developing decortication equipment to decorticate the hemp. So that's why we have now a breaker mill system, not a hammer mill, but a breaker mill system that breaks the fiber loose from the core. And then we make a separation. And then we had raw fiber and shives. And those shives were packed as horse bedding. And the fiber went to the paper industry for cellulose because it was raw, unrefined, 80% pure fiber. It was not suitable for the automotive industry, not suitable for any application. And while we were doing that, we started developing more equipment and we learned more how to do it. And we were able to refine the fiber, get the fiber cleaner. So then we had new markets opening up, and then we entered in the automotive industry and supplying fiber for interior parts and for door panels as a fiberglass replacement that you need in high quality fiber. And from the animal bedding, we also said, okay, we had horses, but we made small packages
right.
for cat litter, sure. rabbits, guinea pigs, and so on. And we started marketing in the retail. So we had an equipment to pack in smaller size. Then we start selling the fiber to an insulation manufacturer for making hemp insulation. We thought, hey, that's nice. We can develop the market here as well. So we start buying back the fiber, and we start selling the insulation here to build a market. And recently, actually, it's funny, in June, we were able to take over this company and as part of the group, also to make the supply chain shorter.
Let's take a quick break to talk about our podcast partner this week, Receptra Naturals. You can find them over at ReceptraNaturals.com. And of course, I'll have links in the show notes to tell you all about them. We're super proud to be working with these guys because they make such high quality CBD products. Receptra has been around since 2015, and they've been operating with one major guiding principle, and it's super simple. The truth is curative. That's Rusty Scott, the founder of Receptra Naturals, said that. And what they basically mean is the product that they represent on their label is exactly what you're getting, and it does what it says it does. In this case, they sent me some of their new Receptra Serious Rest Chamomile Tincture, and it's a 25 milligram dose, right? They have a very easy to read dosage dropper, and 1 milliliter represents 25 milligrams of the Serious Rest Nighttime CBD. This one comes in a vanilla mint flavor, and it's made with full spectrum hemp extract and chamomile to help you sleep. I've been taking it for about 2 weeks now before I go to bed. I'm a very light sleeper, and I have to say, I've been sleeping very well. So I am going to be asking them for more of this. It is a fantastic product. The flavor is not overpowering by any means. You shake it before you take it. I take it about an hour before I go to bed, and I can feel myself relaxing, not so much getting drowsy like a sleep aid would make you, but relaxing and getting ready to go to bed and not worrying about all the stuff that's in my head spinning around. Also, I find myself sleeping really comfortably and well. In the morning, I don't wake up groggy. I don't wake up feeling hungover, which is something that a lot of sleep aids do. I don't feel cloudy at all. I just had nice, restful sleep. And like I said, no grogginess, no cloudiness. I don't feel strange at all. Their label features a QR code where you can get the lab results, which is something we always push for. And the ingredients are right here. And they're very simple. Organic MCT oil, organic sunflower oil, Receptra hemp extract, organic flavors that include vanilla and peppermint, natural flavor of chamomile, valerian root extract, and organic linalool. All right, I don't know what that one is, but it is organic, and it's all written right there, which is good. And right now, the Receptra people are being so cool, you can head to ReceptraNaturals.com, make an order, and use the code MOH15. That's capital M-O-H and the number 1-5 to get 15% off your order. Just for being a Ministry of Hemp listener. You're supporting a great company who is supporting the Ministry of Hemp. And you're gonna get a better night's sleep too. Everybody wins here, and we can't thank them enough for supporting our podcast, and we love getting great brands to you guys. So if you're having trouble sleeping, or you wanna check out any of their other line of CBD products, head over to ReceptraNaturals.com, and again, I will have that link featured in the show notes for this episode. Now back to my conversation with Mark Renders.
To make a long story short, we use every single part of the hemp plant. We don't throw away anything.
That's amazing.
Even the dust coming from the whole process. And you can imagine if you do a lot of mechanized processing on those hemp stalks, you have a lot of dust, about 20% turns in dust. And we call it hemp flour. That's sounds a bit more expensive. And we sell it as an additive to growing media. And this growing media is being pelletized and being sold into the rose breeding industry.
That is
as
amazing.
A growing medium. And it's even exported all over the world. So my let's say, secondary revenue stream is being upgraded to a high-end growing medium being exported to Korea for rose breeding. So we don't throw away anything here. Everything is being used. And that's why we're active in so much markets, because literally we are an upside-down factory. Normally, if you look at a car factory, for example, you have a lot of parts and iron and wheels and electronics. And everything is being put together, all those thousands of parts being put together. And at the end of the day, you have one product, a car.
Yeah.
We are all the way around. We have one raw material called hemp. And that goes in our factory, and we're separating and refining it in all these revenue streams. And if I want it or not, I'm getting all these revenue streams, and I have to sell it. And for that reason, we are active in so many markets. But actually, the sales department is being split into business lines. So we have a business line, construction material, being managed by people who know about construction material and have the know-how and experience. We have a business line, animal care, for the bedding and animal mattresses and wool and all kind of stuff. We have a business line, industrial applications, where we have our non-wovens for door panels, bulk fiber, compounds, pellets, granulates for injection molding and compounding. So that's really the business line for industrial applications. We have a genetics business line where we sell our sowing seeds, but also our harvesting equipment, like the double cup combine we're selling there. We have a business line, nutraceuticals, that's being divided into food and food supplements, where, of course, hemp seed oil, protein powder, but also the whole range of CBD products is being dealt with, from CBD raw material into extracts, into premixes, up to white-labeled, ready-to-consume products like tinctures and capsules.
Sure.
And we have a business line, horticultural, where we sell the growing media, the growing medium enhances, and mulch layers for flower pots and tops. So definitely have a look at our website, because it's really too much to
Yeah, there's a lot. There is a lot going on. It kind of looks like you guys started, you looked at what you were doing with fiber and said, well, where else can we take this part of the plant and plug it into the world? And you found little pieces, most recently insulation. That's a German company that you guys bought. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
What is that like working, moving into something like that? Did someone approach you and say, hey, we could use this to make insulation? Or did you approach, you know, this from your point of view and say, we could make insulation and we should buy it and control it ourselves? There's a huge market here.
Now, actually, this specific company, Terminator, was working with hemp insulation for a long time. Actually, they were the pioneers in hemp insulation. We used to supply them with a lot of fiber in the past. And then one time there came an opportunity. The current investor wants to quit and want to shut down the company. So we said, okay, if you want to shut down, we want to take it over, because we feel comfortable this market has a future. Because, you know, what you see these days, the whole COVID thing, realize people more than ever before that we have to change the way of living.
Yes, absolutely.
Not that we have to go back to the Middle Ages and stop living. No, we can still live. We can still enjoy a warm house and a good insulated house, but we can also do that with different type of materials.
Right.
It doesn't always need to be a synthetic material or a mineral material with a lot of CO2 emission in the production. We can also make good housing with good thermal properties with better materials, because you have to realize at the moment you insulate your house, you're CO2 saving at that moment already, because we have a negative CO2 balance. Even if we add all the CO2 emissions we have for transport, processing, harvesting, field work, and so on, we're still, the crop took more CO2 from the air than we are emitting in our production process.
That's amazing.
If you look at the CO2 balance of a mineral wool, where you have to crush stone and melt it and make fiber out of it, or glass wool insulation or synthetic insulation, they have very high CO2 footprints in the production. Of course, it insulates your house, it saves energy in the summer, in the winter, sorry.
Right.
Not in the summer, but it's not keeping your house cool. But it is ineffective. It's a sustainability lie. Almost.
Right. You're starting off underwater, basically. You're starting off with something that costs CO2 just to build before you crush it into something else. So that's incredible.
And that's the whole thing about a material, because it's good already for day one. Because otherwise, if you insulate your house with a rock wool, for example, your house needs to save energy for a couple of years before it earns back its own energy for production. So in the world, if you talk about sustainability, too many times we look at the sustainability if a product is in use. If this electrical car is on the street,
right,
or the house is insulated. But we believe, and I think that's the only valid methodology to talk about sustainability, is the life cycle assessment. So look at the total life cycle of a product, what impact that gives on our planet and our environment and on our climate. Because if you just look at the news, we just had in the Netherlands 18 days of a heat, summer heat. That's more than 25 degrees. That's very special for the Netherlands. You know, we never had it in the history of meteorology measurements. And the five hottest summers in since the measurements were taken of the climate took place in of the three hottest summers took place in the last 5 years.
Wow.
And we see the melting of the polar ice is going faster and faster every year. On the other hand, the whole COVID pandemic, when people had a lockdown, air transportation put shut down, we saw how quickly the air quality improves again in the cities, in the environment. So we also learned how regenerative the world can be. Of course, I'm not saying we can undo the climate change in 1 year. It will take decades and probably generations to do that. But if we don't start today, what will happen?
Right. Every day we don't start, we push things back probably another 5 or 10 years. So,
and we have alternatives. We can't say because we're out of, the alternatives are there. And of course, in Folion, we are still very small. But imagine what we can do if the concept we have, like Hemflex, is being bigger and being used in more countries. So therefore, again, we need to have clear legislative environment where industrial hemp is not falling under any prohibition. It's free to use because only then we can succeed and we can accelerate our growing and we can bring those products to the market that's so necessary these days.
So you're working in replacing plastic parts in cars. You're working in insulation. What is adoption like right now? Are companies open to this idea? Are they? It seems we're a little resistant here in the States. And I think, quite honestly, it's only because there aren't more companies like Hempflax in the States that are able to do this. We're still building this infrastructure. What's it like in Europe? Have you seen, when you came to car companies and said, hey, we can replace all those plastic knobs with hemp plastic? Are they adopting this? Are they going for it?
That reminds me, I didn't answer a question before because those developments was initiating it. And a lot of time companies are reaching out to us. Hey, listen, we have a product now. We're using glass fiber. We are using mineral fiber, synthetic fiber. Can we replace it with you? And off you make a project out of it together with the development of that company.
That's cool.
And that was how it went with car companies. And car companies first said, hey, we can't use this fiber in this way because they were used to glass fiber, and glass fiber is every day the same because it's not dependent on the weather, it's not dependent on the climate.
Yeah,
it's every day the same thickness, same length, same quality. Where a natural fiber like hemp fiber, we need a variance in the quality because it depends a little bit on the weather, on the harvesting moment, on the situation.
Sure.
So, and it's a both way learning process, but I think it succeeded a lot because today we're supplying fiber for the door panels for the Mercedes SC and A type.
Oh, wow.
For the BMW 3 and 5 series, for the Jaguar, for the Bentley, and even for the Bugatti Veyron.
Oh, wow.
The Bugatti Veyron, I like to say, because it's not making me very rich, because while I'm telling you this, the factory produced enough for them for a whole year to use.
Wow.
But the ID, because they are using it because they're not using hemp fiber in the door panel to make this 1,000 horsepower car look very green in the end of the day because, look, it's hemp fiber in the door panel. Not at all. They use it because it gives weight reduction over carbon fiber. So actually they are using it because of a better mechanical performance. And that's what I like.
Wow.
I want to sell our products because it's better. Not necessarily because it's more sustainable.
Right.
That's the side effect.
Right.
That's the extra.
That's a plus.
People are buying things because it's better for them. Better performance, better quality, better internal climate.
Sure.
So if you can make something that replaces something not sustainable, but it's better, then people will buy it.
Absolutely.
And you make the world sustainable because the people are buying it.
So do you see
That's
a future? Do you see a future where hemp flax has like a Formula One car that is like a body built out of hemp plastics and whatnot? It's a little lighter than the other cars, but it's faster.
I'm looking more at the Formula E.
Okay,
I think it doesn't fit better a bit better then.
Okay,
but, it's possible. Yeah, why not? Because carbon fiber. Well, speaking about CO2 emission in the production, carbon fiber is a CO2 bomb.
Yeah, it's
amazing.
A monster.
Energy input and the CO2 emission. It's a nice fiber, strong fiber. You can make a lot of great, nice, lightweight materials with it, but the LCA is terrible.
Yeah. So you said there's some variance between plastic fibers and like carbon fibers and glass fibers. Are you figuring out ways to shrink that variance to make it to bring these a little more in line?
I think if you look at our production line, again, it starts in the field. And I think, with all respect, there's a lot of it's still missing in the US because you're still working with your first crops. And
yeah.
I see sometimes postings and pictures and movies that, oh, nice, we tried it before. Doesn't work. Good luck. it's a real pity because there's a lot of trial and error there. And it's amazing how much errors we made in our life. I think we made even some errors we made twice, to be sure. That's a whole learning process. And actually, if I look at the production line we've built in Romania, it's already better already compared to the production line here we have in the Netherlands.
Right.
Just because we work with a production line ourselves, and our engineers we have are the operators of the machine. Because the operators, the guys working with the machinery every day, they experience the problems, they see improvements.
Sure.
We give them the freedom to implement the improvements. And for that reason, I think we get a better production line. And then we are able to combination harvesting in the field and processing that we are able to make a very standard type of fiber that can be used in the automotive. If we are not able to do that, we cannot supply to the automotive industry.
Exactly. Yeah. Especially something like the automotive industry where you have safety standards and whatnot that have to be very rigid in case an SUV crashes into one of those Mercedes, you know. And I'm sure they brought you each one of those cars after they fitted these. They said, thank you so much. Here you go. And you've got one of each, right?
No, not at all.
I'm sorry to hear
that. Doesn't fit in the budget. maybe in the future.
So you brought up a point. It kind of blows my mind how far behind the States is because of the prohibition and how we thought about this. And even now, when we have, like, people in Europe, such as Hempflax, that are literally 20 years ahead of us in working with this, we still haven't fully connected and looked to say, like, hey, how are you guys doing that? We could use a little help over here, you know? We're getting it together, but what do you think the future is for Hempflax? Where do you go from here? You guys have already, you're in almost every business I can think of, not from agriculture to industrial. What's next?
What's next? Of course, we're looking at America with great interest.
Yes.
And for some quite time already, since 2015, after we finished the Romanian factory, we looked at the U.S. But at that time, the federal legislation was not there yet.
Yeah.
Early 18 doesn't look like it was going to happen. In the end, in December 18, the farm bill was signed, finally. But up to then, we couldn't do anything.
Sure.
Because if it was not legal on federal level, I could not open a bank account. I could not ship it to every state. Insurance policies.
Right.
All those things you need as a company, because I cannot go to my energy company with a bag of money and I want to pay the bill of this month. You
right.
know?
You're effectively a drug dealer at that point. So.
And I can only operate in a full legal environment. So we had to wait till the farm bill was signed. And then the farm bill was signed. And then everybody was jumping on it. And of course, in the whole CBD craziness,
yeah.
We said, okay, well, let's see what happens. Because, and I was very worried because I learned that so many acres of hemp were being sown without people having a harvesting machine, without having a market, without having the whole supply chain. And I think it's just a waste of energy and capital there, also for the farmers growing a very nice hemp crop but not being able to sell it or harvest it. I have one free advice, really, and it's no offense, but if you don't have a customer, you don't have a factory, and you don't have the proper harvesting machinery, do not plant hemp.
Yeah, it's insane.
Hemp is an expensive crop. It will cost you money when you plant it. It will cost you money when you harvest it. It will cost you even a whole lot more money if you start processing it. It only returns your money at the moment. It's in a truck, heading your customer, including invoice, and get your invoice paid.
Right.
And that moment you get your invoice paid can easily be 2.5 years after the moment you planted the hemp. And that's something you have to consider. If you don't have a customer, do not. Last year, we got a phone call in October from a U.S. guy and said, hey, I have 800 acres of hemp. I need a combine harvester. So when? Next year? He said, no, next week. So listen, this double cut combine is weighing 25,000 kilograms.
Right. We can't just like put
it's
it
into something I can send to you with DHL overnight express.
Well, what about piece by piece though? What if we took it apart, packed it up, you know?
No, I gave the suggestion, hire an Antonov plane. Maybe that works.
Yeah, there you go.
That'd be a costly flight, but amazing. If you plant hemp, you should have a harvesting, at least you should have bought a harvesting machine, because 100 till 120 days after planting, it's harvesting time. And that, if you have to import machinery from Europe or whatever, you have to plant it in advance. So if you're thinking about a 2021 crop, you have to plant it today or already start planning your harvest.
Yeah. It's crazy because, I mean, we're very pro-hemp and we are pushing hemp education and we want to see it succeed. And I love that farmers are getting interested in this, but we just experienced this massive hemp bubble last year that burst because we had so much planted and there was literally no one to make fiber out of it, no one to dry it, no one to process it. And a lot of trucking companies wouldn't even ship it because they don't know. And it's terrifying. It's so terrifying. I feel like you guys are sitting across the pond sort of watching the rats eat each other right now to see like who comes out the strongest, you know?
Yeah.
But no, I'm jealous.
It's very interesting to see, but sometimes I was a bit worried because, you know, I'm a farmer's son myself, and I know also here in Europe, let's say face the fact, we also had quite some insolvencies in Europe from hemp processors that didn't make it, they didn't have customers in place, and farmers got unpaid. And then the problem is hemp gets a very negative call because farmers think, oh, yeah, you planned it, you never get paid, people get bankrupt. And, and then in the end, if there comes the people and the company that really is taking up the good job and wants to do it right, is not able to get farmers because farmers are getting suspicious because they heard negative experiences from colleagues.
Yeah, or they saw what happened to the guy next door, you know, and said, no, I'm not doing that. That's crazy.
And that's what worries me a little bit. In order to be that hemp and U.S. get successful, it's really time that a company steps up and tries to do it right this time. Think before you plant. That's my free advice I want to give. And
it's a scary time right now.
Have a look at Europe. You know, we have once a year. This year was online, but the hemp conference of the European International Hemp Association. Technically, there's the worldwide hemp industry is present there. There's a lot to learn there, a lot to know. Maybe next year it will be real life. Up to then, we do like everything at the moment online. That saves me a lot of traveling, by the way.
Well, we look forward to working with you guys, hopefully sometime in the future. I don't know. I mean, things are still pretty up in the air and kind of messy. But if you want to come over and show us how it's done, we could use a little guidance, honestly.
If they allow me to go over again.
Yeah, no doubt. You don't want to come right now. It's kind of a mess. Let us clean up this COVID business first. So.
I'm afraid we'll stay like that for a while.
Yeah, unfortunately. Mark, thank you so much. This has been wonderful. And I can't tell you how much I appreciate your time. And I got out of bed early just to do this. So. I want to send a huge thank to Bethany, who set this interview up. I didn't realize that Mark was in the Netherlands, and it was a little earlier than I expected, but I feel like I still sounded pretty awake. I just want to touch on one of the most interesting things that Mark said in the end of the interview, when he brought up that American farmers who are choosing to plant hemp need to make sure they have a customer first, and it's true. One of the major reasons that hemp producers had so many issues last year with their harvest was because there's just not enough infrastructure in place to take all that hemp and turn it into everything that it needs to be, whether it's CBD or fiber. Just today, I got an email for someone that was posting a comment on one of our older podcast episodes about how they were a farmer and they needed to know where they could sell their hemp. That is the wrong way to do this. You have to have a plan in place. You just have to. And while we encourage everyone to look at growing hemp and get into growing hemp, you still have to make sure that there's infrastructure there and you have the proper connections to get that hemp where it needs to go so you can make money. Because at the end of the day, you gotta pay your bills. Hemp flax is obviously in a country that is a lot more accepting and helpful when it comes to this kind of stuff. And the US is moving that direction. And we're going to get there. I really do believe that. In the meantime, be careful. And just like Mark said, if you don't have someone to sell that hemp to, maybe you shouldn't be growing it. That brings us to the end of another exciting episode of the Ministry of Hemp podcast. I want to thank everybody that has been listening and downloading and commenting and calling with their hemp questions. You can call me at 402-819-6417 with any of your hemp-related questions, or you can shoot them to me in an MP3 at matt@ministryofhemp.com. Nothing is off limits, and we love to answer your questions on the show, just like we did in the episode before this one. Next week on the show, we're going to be talking about a new technology that could revolutionize testing when it comes to hemp. And testing is a hot button issue. Remember, you got to keep everything below 0.03% THC. And when you have a plant that looks like marijuana and smells like marijuana, it can be very hard to convince certain members of law enforcement that it is in fact hemp and not marijuana. If you need more Ministry of Hemp in your life in the meantime, head over to ministryofhemp.com, where we have a fantastic story that is all about CBG. It's an introduction to, and I'm going to say this totally wrong, but I'm going to try it, cannabigerol. Actually, I think I nailed it, but cannabigerol, or CBG, is very hot right now. And this is a great article that will help you understand just exactly what this cannabinoid does and why so many companies are featuring it. You can also follow us on all of our social media at Ministry of Hemp, /Ministry of Hemp. We're everywhere. And if you want to take it a step further, head to Patreon /Ministry of Hemp and become a Ministry of Hemp insider. It is the best way to help us to get this message of hemp education out to other people. And it helps us so very much. Any amount you give makes you a Ministry of Hemp insider, gets you access to podcast extras, early access to articles, and bonus articles too. I cannot say thank you enough to everybody that is already supporting us. And like I said, if you want to help get the word out there, head to Patreon /ministryofhemp.com, become a Ministry of Hemp insider. I cannot stress how much it helps us spread the good word of hemp. Speaking of which, at Ministry of Hemp, we believe an accessible world is a better world for everyone, so you can find a full written transcript of this episode in the show notes as well. Huge thanks again to Receptra for being our partners in this one. Check them out at ReceptraNaturals.com, and I'll have a link to their site in the show notes as well that'll tell you more about their new Serious Rest for Nighttime Full Spectrum Hemp Extract with Chamomile. All right, that about does it, but I like to end the show the same way every time by saying remember to take care of yourself, take care of others, and make good decisions, will ya? This is Matt Baum with the Ministry of Hemp, signing off.